Hey everyone, and welcome to City Awesome. I'm Matteo Bonetti, joined as always by Nikki Bandini and Mina Rizzucchi to break down all the craziest action from Serie A. And if you didn't hear, it was a pretty wild week between Jose Mourinho joining Roma for the next three seasons, Paulo Fonseca leaving Roma at the end of the season, and of course, Inter winning the Scudetto. And there's also a battle for those final Champions League positions with potentially Juventus and Milan dropping out. But we have to start with the biggest news, and that is Inter securing the Scudetto with still a month to go in the Serie A season. This was Inter's first trophy since Jose Mourinho led them to a treble more than a decade ago. So Nikki, tell us what it means for Inter and how much was it deserved?
Oh, it means the start of a new era in the end, whether or not it turns out to be an era as dominant and swaggering as the one we've just seen from Juventus. Well, we can't say that. It's a long way ahead, but it's a new era. It's been a long time in the wilderness for a club that doesn't normally spend this long in the wilderness. I know that Inter have a reputation and I think earned for a lot of people in the sort of 90s when they were the club that spent the most but never quite won as much as it should have compared to, say, Milan or Juventus. But Inter are still a team that I think had only had two runs in their entire history longer than this without a title. So they are not a team that's used to going a full decade without winning Serie A. They're not a team that's used to spending as long as they did. Remember, guys, they weren't just not winning Serie A for a lot of this time. They were out of the Champions League for a lot of this time. They were really in this post-Mourinho funk that they couldn't get out of. And yes, they started to climb out of that even before Conte got there, but now they've taken this next step on. We talked loads about Conte last week, and of course, in the end, this is going to be viewed as his triumph first and foremost. I think that's inevitable, but I think it's really worth talking as well this week about some of the players who've made such a difference. I mean, the most obvious one by far is the one who I think of when you say, what does this mean? What does it mean for the career of Romelu Lukaku, who up till this point had this reputation as just being a fat-track bully, as being someone who certainly in England took a lot of criticism for having this heavy touch, for not doing the things that he was supposed to in the games that supposedly mattered the most. And I think that for him finally to have something major to hold up and say, look, I won this. Because until now, it was just an FA Cup in 2012 at Chelsea that wasn't really his. He played two games. Sorry, that sounds too harsh. I'm not trying to take it away from him, but he didn't play in the final. He wasn't a core member of that team. This team is his team. He's the top scorer. He's the leading assist man. He's the character of this team. He's the one you think of. So I think it means a lot for individuals as well as the club.
Yeah, actually, you know, you were mentioning about the players and what it's done to their career, and I agree with that. But I also... this is Conte's success, but I also want to mention not just the players, but also the management in general. I mean, just taking this from Eric Tohir to the Suning company, who had made such an investment. It was calculated by Italian media that's nearly 700 million euros being spent to gain what it is that they've got right now, the ascendancy to have snatched it and started an era to snatch it from Juve. That is a lot of investment. That is a lot of care. The fact that as soon as Beppe Marotta left Juventus, there was immediately a meeting set up. This is a brilliant executive who had won executive of the year 2018 when he departed Juventus. And the way that he has helped and communicated with Antonio Conte, the diplomacy shown by everyone to try to get on the same page. There's been problems, obviously, with how much spending can be done. And yet everyone was placated. Everyone was happy in the end when we thought, you know, drama could spill out at every corner, but it didn't. And I think that there's been a coherent project there that you saw, because there was so much disharmony in that dressing room. Antonio Candreva's wife used to talk about it. There was Wonder and obviously Icardi, Nainggolan not playing. And Marotta came in and just took them all out. And Spalletti had to suffer a lot of those sacrifices because obviously Icardi was injured and didn't play for a long time. But it was something that was worth doing for the club in the long run, just setting that right balance, bringing in the leadership required, bringing in someone like Romelu Lukaku, like Barella, who is so desperate to win something, Ashraf Hakimi, who shows such great ambition, even guys like Ashley Young, Handanovic, and obviously my favourite defender of all in De Vrij. Such leadership, such balance all over the pitch. And I think that that is a coherent effort from management from the start. There was such a clear plot project going forward. And you can never win with just a great manager, but you add a great manager to a wonderful management team, and you have, and you absolutely have hit the jackpot successfully. And I just honestly think that it's all been planned in such a great way when you see everyone else falling off. Milan have now collected themselves and also are showing great signs of that. But you can see, you take a few things away from Juventus, management crumbles, and the team can't even, don't even know if they make top four. So for that, I really do feel like it's everyone's success. And from Zhang to Marotta to Antonio Conte to the kit man to Antonio Pintus and his conditioning, it's been a fabulous ride.
Mina, I'm glad you mentioned Mauro Icardi. We actually haven't mentioned his name, I don't think, this whole season on Serie A.
Awesome.
I felt like he was out of my life completely. And then I was reminded that he's still a thing yesterday in the Champions League, where he led the line for PSG, had his typical game where he had maybe two touches. For Inter, he was kind of the symbol of those mid-2010s, right? This dark period of Inter, along with Milan, where both the two Milano-based clubs couldn't even get into the top four. And I think going from Icardi in that situation that you mentioned, that there was a broken dressing room, right? There was all that drama between him and, I think, Ivan Perisic. That was and Brozovic as well, right? That was kind of part of the biggest feud, is a few of those players with Icardi and Wandanara. And not really the most popular player, I think, even dating back to the Maxi Lopez and you know, kind of stealing away his wife. That did not go down well with the Argentine team. But I think the whole point is there's been none of that, right, since Antonio Conte took over. There hasn't been that disharmony in the locker room. And also the vision of Antonio Conte to realize, you know, this team with Mauro Icardi leading the line, that is probably the worst kind of striker to play in a system where you need someone to hold the play, to make the runs in behind. Icardi is an old school poacher. It feels like he's a striker from an era that's long gone in Serie A. And to go from him to Lukaku, who, Mina, as you rightfully mentioned, criticism about him, but doesn't it feel so silly now in hindsight, where it's almost like picking up Lionel Messi that he's not a good header of the ball? Because Romelu Lukaku, okay, his touch sometimes isn't the slickest. Sometimes he bobbles it. Sometimes it gets away from him. But it doesn't prevent him from being one of the most ruthless and terrifying counterattacking strikers in the entire world. He's so good at so many other things. And I feel like it's so unfair to just pinpoint the things that he doesn't do at a very high level. He does them good enough to link up with Lautaro. And how many times have we seen Lukaku hold up play, the defender no chance with his back to goal to even bully Lukaku off the ball, and he slips through the perfect pass for Lautaro. So I think it was the vision of Conte for a long time now in knowing exactly the perfect striker for his system. This dates back to when Conte was a Premier League manager, that he had interest in Lukaku. And together, that's been the most important partnership. And I know I wanted to talk about, you know, who we think the MVPs are. And I think we're probably all in agreement that it is Lukaku and what he's done for the club and how he's scored over 20 goals now for the last few seasons. But other than that, does anyone else come to mind that you look at and say, right, that is the other most important player? That is someone that, you know, even in the second half of the season, which now feels like so far removed from the first 4 months of the campaign, where there was constant criticism, they finished fourth in the Champions League group stage, the team didn't seem like they were a unit. And so often we came on this show and had a negative talking point about Inter, and now they're blowing out everyone in Serie A. So who else do you think was the most important in kind of shifting the tone and really being part of this much more positive Inter squad in 2021?
Before I answer, I want to draw really quickly off the back of what Mina was saying as well about, and you were referencing what I guess we might call, to use a phrase you used about Milan the other day, the banter era of Milan. Mm. Mina talking about the management, my mind went back to, guys, Mauro Icardi was allowed to publish a book in which he literally picked a fight with the club's fans. And no one had read that and said, you're the club captain, maybe don't write a book in which you say that you're going to get your friends over from Argentina to fight them. That was wild. I think it's wild when we think back to the era that Inter were in before this.
But can you believe it took Marotta to just change that? Like, as in no one clicked in their brains that this guy should probably not be there anymore.
I had forgotten that madness because everything's been so serene recently, and it just came back into my head. Like, that was the thing that happened. That actually happened. Your captain, your leading scorer, wrote a book in which she said, I'm going to bring my friends from Argentina to fight you. Madness. To answer your question, Matteo, I think for me, and I keep banging this drum that I've banged a lot this season, after Lukaku, come back to the defence. And I think Mina's already mentioned him, Stefan de Vrij is exceptional. He was exceptional at Lazio as well. He's an exceptional centre-back, and I think now the world can see it a bit more. And probably after Lukaku, he might even be the guy, although I think there are others. I think Brozovic has been his best that I've seen in a long time from him. I think... well, actually, I don't think he's been the best at all, but I really am happy for Handanovic for how much he's put into the club. I think that Skriniar is a low-key second half of the season MVP because he was not even in the team at the beginning. Conte had this brief idea at the start of the season that he was going to play with his Eriksen number 10, and maybe he was listening to everyone who said, your football's boring and counter-attacking, and he wanted to have Kolarov in the defence so he could play it out from the back, and it was terrible. And then Skriniar came back in and played, I think, close to 30 games in the end, and was really good. And that shouldn't be a surprise because Skriniar was really good last season as well. But really that whole trio, actually, because Bastoni, I think, has really stepped up as the young Italian centre-back. You start to feel really positive about their future as well. But De Vrij is the one who knits together. De Vrij.
Sorry, Mina, really quickly. Nikki, you just reminded me, and this is how time has been warped during this COVID era, where something that happened at the start of the season feels like 10 years ago. That just reminded me of all the conversations that we were having at the start of the season on this podcast, where we were going at Conte saying, how can you play Kolarov and Vidal, these two guys that you wanted for experience?
This is it. It was, I mean, if there was one mistake that I can say they did in management level, it is to bring, for me still, Arturo Vidal. As soon as he exited the team and made room for Christian Eriksen, and you had that double midfielder and that ability to play the ball. There was this moment against Crotone where they were passing the ball in the final third, and the calm that Brozovic and Eriksen have on the ball, the fact that they can help each other, one drops back, one moves forward, the ability to possess the ball, to quickly throw it and release it when required, that intelligence in the final third has only really been visible in the second half of the campaign, and largely due to Eriksen. So I do think that, you know, it's funny that his goal ends up being the one that, you know, wins the Scudetto, basically, you know. But I do think that his impact, his introduction to the side has been so impactful because it's helped bring out the very best in Brozovic. But I also want to talk about Lautaro Martinez because I'm one of those people that just never kind of got why he was so expensive and why Barcelona was so in love with him. I could see the talent there, but there was a lot of things that I was like, you know, like, not sure about that, bad decision there, and what's happening there. And, oh, he has these moments of inconsistencies. But he has really grown on a tactical and positional sense. He knows exactly how to move right now, when he's on the ball, when he's off the ball, how to help the team. And I think that for me has been like, he's the most improved player. Like, I can really see his ability now and capability. And I think he's somebody that requires a lot of plaudits. But Vidal and Kolarov, the only probably two that I'm just like, yeah, would take them out of that team.
Yeah, and Vidal was brought in as one of the players that was actually supposed to kind of improve the leadership, and he showed none of that. He was actually a bit of a hothead this season. You didn't really trust him when he was out there. And now, in hindsight, it doesn't look as egregious, but he was chosen ahead of Sandro Tonali. Remember, Sandro Tonali was linked to Inter, and then Conte said he wanted players that were ready right away to contribute. And in hindsight, I mean, Sandro Tonali hasn't really done well at Milan. He's not a starter. But Arturo Vidal has really done nothing of note. And that goes the same as Alexander Kolarov. So those are two strikeouts for Conte in the
transfer market. Is that our LVP? If we're doing MVPs, is that our least valuable?
Those are our least valuable players, absolutely. Another one is Nicolò Barella, who embodies everything.
To be clear, that sounded like you were saying he's another LVP.
Oh, no, he's my secondary MVP. So you went with De Bruyne. That's a great shout. Nicolò Barella, right behind Lukaku. I feel like he's a mix of all the best midfielders that Conte has had, right? You got a little bit of... You know, you think back to the Juventus days of Antonio Conte. He's got a little bit of a Claudio Marchisio. He's got the ability to rush forward like Arturo Vidal. He's got that aggression of like a prime Arturo Vidal when he was at Juve. And when he's on the pitch, you realize right away why Conte loves him so much. This is someone that from the first minute into stoppage time, I've done games with him in the 93rd minute where I remember him sprinting the length of the pitch, to put pressure on a defender in possession when the Inter was up by two goals. I mean, this is someone that leaves it all out on the pitch and someone who can do a bit of everything, who grew up at Cagliari as a trequartista, and he can play in front of the defense. He can play as a mezzala, as like one, just a central midfielder, or he can play behind the striker. He can do a bit of everything. And to me, he is the future of the Italian national team as well. He's one of my favorite midfielders. I think he can genuinely become one of the most well-rounded players that we've seen in that position in Europe. So I'm going to go with Nicolò Barella. But I also wanted to talk about, because we talk so much about Conte, we talk so much about Lukaku, and rightfully so, who stands out as the players that aren't talked about as much but had a big role in this Scudetto for Inter?
I mean, I think...
Matteo Darmian?
I think this is the problem. I mean, it's almost, this is the whole point, and perhaps the greatest success of lots of Conte teams is that in the end, what you end up... recognizing is that part of his triumph is to get all the unsung guys doing, yeah, singing a tune, as it were, and Darmian is one of them. I've realized in this MVP chat, none of us have mentioned Hakimi yet, who also has been so important because he's the guy who gives width, who gives the crosses, who gives that something that Conte definitely wants. But yeah, if you want someone who's less obvious, Darmian. I think Ashley Young has had a perfectly solid season. Like, he hasn't been the best player on that team, not by a long chalk, but he's done a role. Even you could say that about probably Alexis Sanchez. He's had his moments, which the team have needed from him. Has he been the most important player, not by a very, very long chalk, but I think that's kind of back to the Conte triumph. The Conte triumph is a bit of everyone, but it's certainly Darmian is the guy who you maybe think has, if we're going to talk about the short-lived Super League and legacy fans, he feels like a legacy player in some way. Not that he's been there forever, but just he just feels like a throwback to a different kind of Inter, and he... he's certainly another one who's popular.
I think that Perisic deserves a lot of accolades as well, because I think that, you know, he was somebody that was cast away as somebody who wouldn't fit into Antonio Conte's style of play. Obviously went to Bayern, won a treble, came back, and still determined to run forward, to change the pace of the game. Coming on as a substitute, he was somebody that you can rely on to make the difference. And I'm really happy for him, because I feel like it's been a while with him in Inter, and it's been like the story that's had its up and downs. You know, we mentioned about Icardi. So I'm happy that for him it ended up being something extraordinary. On the topic of, I think it's interesting as we're seeing everyone sort of fall apart, you know, fitness issues. It's been a really long season. And I think that to be so concentrated, that is the... It's amazing to have a one-man band in Antonio Conte, you know, just having all this fire, all of this electricity, this person who's managed to keep them motivated and keep them interested in the job. I also want to mention, because I've been so harsh on Arturo Vidal, it was his goal against Juventus that turned things around for.
It's true.
So, you know, perhaps that was what he came in for, you know, giving them that confidence, scoring that goal and making them realize that if they can do it against Juventus, they could do it against anyone else. And that compounded what it is that Conte was trying to tell them, that we are good enough. We just have to believe we're good enough. And in a time when I feel like a lot of people have dropped concentration in key moments, obviously Napoli over the weekend, Juventus pretty much throughout the season, Milan in 2021, Conte has never let them do that. And I think that, you know, he had a lot riding on this. So that is obviously the pressure of trying to do something there. But it is the step up in quality from the players, the fact that they did find a more tactical, a better tactical identity. And I do, I will keep going back to this, but for me, there is a part of me that just thinks Eriksen has been like the greatest gift to them in 2021. And I feel like he's overall added and injected the quality that they have required to be that bit more unpredictable, to not just be going out and in and trying to find a way to be more attacking. He's just allowed them that quality through the middle that they didn't have, because like you mentioned, Hakimi, Young, Perisic, all brilliant. The quality down the middle, it was always down to Brozovic trying to control everything and Barella running as much as possible. Now they found their perfect balance.
And then
Vidal kissed the badge that day. The day that Juventus scored that goal, before he scored it, everyone was going crazy because he kissed the Juventus badge.
Killini, he was an accident.
That's true. That's true. And it was one of Gallardini or Vidal, right, as that third midfielder. And obviously with Christian Eriksen coming in January. And once again, it's one of those that, yes, we can give Conte credit, but it was almost by default that it had to happen because they tried to offload him in January. I mean, I remember that we were talking about, oh, Spurs want him, Ajax want him. And then they realized, but we have to pay the wages and Inter is not going to help us out in paying a portion of his wages. And no one wanted to take on that 7.5 million euro salary a season, especially during COVID and the financial crisis that a lot of big football teams have undergone. But Perisic, as you mentioned, Mina, a player that when Conte took over, another one that kind of randomly happened, right? Because Conte said, he's not going to fit in my system as a left wing back. He's not going to fit as a second striker. He tried him out in both roles in the ICC in the summer tournament 2 years ago, and then shipped him off to Bayern, won a treble, came back. And midway through the season, just like Eriksen, I think Conte realized, right, I have these two very good players on the bench. Let's find a way to integrate them. And I think Perisic gives you more than Ashley Young on the left. He's a great attacking player, two-footed player that is very difficult to mark one-on-one. And Christian Eriksen, playing a little bit deeper than he ever did with Tottenham, actually doing really well in the end and scoring important goals. You think of the free kick against Milan in the cup. You think of the goals that he scored just recently in the league to help win the Scudetto. Those are two of the most, I think, underappreciated players when you look back in history and you think back of, right, the players who clearly stand out. You think of Romelu Lukaku and Lautaro, their partnership, but it was the inclusion, I think, of Eriksen and Perisic, which really gave a push to Inter in the second half of the season. So I think the final topic, Mina and Nikki, going forward is, can Inter continue this? Is this the start of their own dynasty? Like we saw with Juventus winning 9 straight. I'm not saying that any team is going to win 9 straight again. I don't think it's going to happen, to be honest, in our lifetimes that we see this sort of dynasty go over for a decade. But is now Inter the team that everyone else looks at and thinks, how do we stop this?
I hope we don't have another team do 9 straight. I'm sorry. It's not about any individual team. I think it's a less interesting league when one team is winning 9 league straight. It's impressive. Don't let me ever be misunderstood on that. What Juventus have done for the last 9 years is incredibly impressive. I don't want to hear any of the sort of boring stuff people like to say about, oh, other clubs weren't good enough. If you win for 9 years straight, it's because you're bloody good. I'm sorry. That's just all there is to it. You can't do that unless you are consistently running your club in an extremely, extremely impressive way. And Juventus deserve all the praise in the world for that. But the drama happens when things are not when things are not clear cut, when there is jeopardy, when there's different teams all fighting together. And Serie A is always at its best when we have at least a few of the old Sette Sorelle, the big clubs, the Seven Sisters, showing up and doing their bit at the top of the table. So I would hope it's not going to be 9 years in a row. Do I think that Inter have a really good chance to start next season as the favourites? Yeah, they might. If Conte is still there and Juventus, I would guess we're going to have a managerial change and every other club realistically is starting from a position behind them. Milan have shown what they can do, but I don't think anyone currently looks at that squad and thinks it's stronger player for player than Inter's. They have to resolve whatever's gone off the boil for them in the second half of the season. They have to make sure they're not going to be Ibra dependent next season, because with the best win in the world, he is a year older. The likes of Lazio and Atalanta, even Napoli, although Napoli are closer, they have got a bit of a ground to cover in terms of their budget, and Atalanta even more so if they're going to overcome Inter. So Inter probably are going to start next season as favourites, depending on what happens next summer, because who knows? We've already been very surprised in the last few days by some news that we're going to talk about soon. But yeah, I think this should be the beginning of something to build on. And of course, the other thing that depends on is the assumption, which is an assumption we should never get too comfortable in, that Antonio Conte isn't going to turn around at some point and go, all right, well, I've done this now, I'll go off and do something else.
Yeah, it was interesting, actually, the fact that when he was talking about it, he said, you know, we'll see. He didn't like definitively say, I'm definitely here next season.
He doesn't like to, does he?
Look, I understand, like, Zidane does that too, and I don't understand why people like to leave you on tenterhooks, but I don't know, whatever works for you. Gattuso doesn't like to renew his contract because he wants to prove himself every year. I don't I'd be like, sign me up, 10 years, you know, I'll take the money. But anyway, I guess they deserve to be a team that can open a dynasty. But I agree with you that obviously I am a Juventus fan, so I did enjoy the last 9 years. But it did get a little bit boring. And I did feel like also it loses its flavor. Even as a Juventus fan, winning something all the time, it's almost like it's not good enough anymore. They have to win everything before it becomes interesting. And so when you have to fight for something a little bit more, then you understand its value. And I think this is what's so important about and this season and what we've learned from this season. I'm interested to see what happens with Juventus. Obviously, we know what's happened with Roma. I want to see who Napoli or what they decide to do over the summer. But I do like having an injection of cash in each team. I would like more money to be in Serie A so that things are just that bit more interesting and we're not dealing with, you know, Crotone size versus, you know, Juventus size. I don't want money to be such a huge factor. I just wish everyone has it, you know. But I do like that Milan has started a wonderful project. I love the management right now of Milan. I love the management right now of Inter. And I feel like they especially, the sponsorship deals, the work that they've done behind the scenes, changing the logos, trying to introduce a lot more internationals, the backroom staff, everything they've done is an example to follow. So for them, they really do deserve this. And I feel like they deserve to be considered as the favorites next season. I think good management, Sassuolo being another one, always deserve to be up there. And
yeah. You know, I like that you said that for Juventus fans, it's almost like they get tired of winning because, I mean, just look at what happened with Max Allegri, Maurizio Sarri, who won the Scudetto and then left. Like, it wasn't good enough. It's like, yeah, you won, but there was the Champions League and you didn't play whatever good enough football is. Where on the other side, Inter this season, in the second half, I thought they actually looked good. I thought they played good counterattacking football at times. I really enjoyed watching Lukaku torch these provincial center backs where you just look at the eyes, it's like deer in the headlights with this, you know, the Crotone defender saying, I am actually terrified of marking this guy because he is going to use an American phrase, posterize me. And that's what he did with so many different, Nikki, I know you know what I'm talking about. And that's what he did with so many different defenders. So I enjoyed the quote unquote defensive counterattacking football. I like that Conte went back to his roots and we saw him sometimes get a little bit too adventurous in the first half, especially in Europe, or maybe he thought, right, is this style going to work in Europe? And that's still a question mark, right? Because that's what Diego Simeone and Jose Mourinho have also realized now in the last few years, that it seems like football is going in a direction where the Bayern or PSG or Manchester City style of football is the one that gets success, whether it's in domestic leagues or in Europe, where it is about taking risks, high press, high line, playing, you know, quick touch football that's possession based, where basically you're the team that's deciding the rhythm and the tempo of the game and really taking it to your opposition. And that's not the Inter way. And it's actually a pretty rare philosophy for a team that is winning a domestic league in the top five European leagues, because you just don't see that too much. If you look at the way that Inter play compared to the other league winners, there is a clear difference, and I kind of like it because I don't want every team to play the same. I don't want every team to please the football hipsters that started watching football 5 days ago and just want to see possession. So good for you, Antonio Conte.
I do want to say one thing on what you've noted. I'm really sorry because, you know, I have to come back. You know, yeah. as you were saying, you know, that is what we're seeing in Europe and that is what's succeeding. You know, but I feel like, if anything, Guardiola has failed for the last 5 years. Now that he's managed to understand defense and have a little bit more balance, they've reached their first final, because I think they look more like a team that's actually more pragmatic than philosophical. So I would say, look, Juventus reached two finals. Atletico Madrid reached two finals. Zidane is the most pragmatic coach that Real Madrid have had in the last, you know, I mean, Mourinho was very defensive, but Zidane's very pragmatic. And so I don't know whether I can honestly tell you, I think these are myths when people like to say, you know, it's Bayern style football that wins these things. But I still think a lot of the time, the teams that know how to defend and still attack, you know, when they can, are the teams that, we'll discuss this when it comes to Roma, but not
to get into it.
I think if anything, Manchester City have
failed. Our producer's telling us we have to move on, but Real Madrid under Zinedine Zidane would still be the one that imposes their football on their opposition. They're not going to sit back and absorb and hit on them. It's a completely different style of play, the Real Madrid that won the Champions League compared to what Inter did this season.
No, I understand that. But I mean, when you look at like what they were, for example, the Decima, I think that was a very progressive style of football under Ancelotti. I think they pulled it back a little with Zinedine Zidane. And I do think that they benefited, obviously, from having people like Gareth Bale and Ronaldo. We can talk about these things because it's being mentioned a lot as a narrative in Italian media right now. Where do we go? But you'll take us into the next segment and we can go in further detail.
Jose Mourinho will be the new Roma manager for the next three seasons, but will he stay that long? If we know anything about Mourinho, is that he never sticks around one place long enough to the point where he's even been living in hotels anticipating his next move to whatever big club comes chasing him. So we're going to delve into all the nitty-gritty of this move. Is he the right fit for Roma? Will they get better? Should they have sacked Paulo Fonseca? And is Jose Mourinho still a special one, given that he hasn't had that much success as of late? So, Mina, does he still have that special sauce?
I think his name is still worth a lot, right? I mean, you make a splash. If you're a Roma fan, you're more interested in having Jose Mourinho be on your bench than, say, if someone said to you, hey, we're bringing in Semplici, you know? Even though I think Semplici is a wonderful coach, you know? But I mean, it's just a name that generates headlines and you associate it to winning, despite the fact that his recent history doesn't say that as much. But I'm so ecstatic, it's like weird. I don't know whether I'm, you know, I love the melodrama. I love my football to be a telenovela. I want everything to be explosive. I want people going crazy. It makes it all so much more interesting for me. I hate when everyone's very well behaved, you know. I like to complain about it, right? That's the best thing in life, is to complain about the mad things. Now, whether or not this is a great idea, I don't know. What I think is very interesting is that Roma management did say to him, you know, this isn't going to be a perfect team straight away. It's about building towards having a great team. So I think there is an understanding that there's going to be a little bit of patience required and he can't have everything he wants from the get-go. Let's not forget that Roma has quite a bit of debt at the moment. So that'll be interesting to see. But I'll tell you something. When I look back at his successes, for example, at Chelsea, at Inter, he's somebody that took the limelight, you know, that it allowed his players to just follow him. And more or less it was, let's follow this leader. And I think that when he went to Real Madrid, it was his first experience with a club where there were players who would be like, wait, hold on a second. Who do you think you are? And I think that's what happens in a club that doesn't have Galacticos. And I feel like that shook his self-confidence a little bit. So I think that if he can be the star of the show and not have any question marks hanging over him about who he is and what he represents. I think even those questions were asked by Spurs players on some occasions. You know, Dele Alli had spoken about it before he'd arrived. I'm not saying to you that's why he's no longer the player that, you know, the manager that he is, and he's not winning as much. But Mourinho was a man who got the best players, you know, always expensive sides, had a clear strategy and a lot of warriors. So it worked. I don't know whether his style of play is no longer useful, but I'll tell you this much, if I'm a Roma fan, like I said, I'd rather have Mourinho than most other coaches because I'll always associate the man to winning, even if his recent history has told me otherwise.
I think it's so interesting. I think the reaction to him in Italy contrasts so heavily with what it would be if another Premier League club signed him right now. In Italy, you've got front pages. I think Italy, I don't know, because I suppose I can't speak for every other country, but I feel like it's the only country where people still use a special one unironically. Like in England, if someone calls Mourinho the special one, they mean, you know, they're taking the mickey out of him. They're sort of going, oh, the special one who, you know, had four rubbish seasons at Manchester United and Tottenham. In Italy, it's like he's frozen in time. It's like he is still fresh off that treble. He's still the guy who did this thing that no one has done before or since in Italy and won the Champions League and the league and the Coppa Italia. And, you know, they were talking about in the Gazzetta dello Sport, the biggest sports newspaper in Italy, they're talking about in the leader column, this is going to be transformative, not just for Roma, but for all of Italian football. And honestly, I think some of it's really overblown personally, because I think he isn't that guy still from 2010. He has had a career journey, as we all do. And I think that this point in his career, I do have some pretty big concerns about where he is as a manager. If you want my honest gut feeling, I think he's going to be a disaster, but I'm really looking forward to finding out because I think he certainly is at a moment where he has a lot to prove to people. I think the reason that I think it's going to be disaster, I'm not just saying that in some comment about him. I think that Roma squad. So to draw a parallel, you were just talking about him going to Real Madrid. When he signed for Real Madrid, Florentino Perez stood up and said, this is the Galactico this year. This is our Galactico. We don't need a star player. We've got this guy. And I think Roma are doing the same thing, except that Roma squad needs a lot more than just the manager. It needs quite a lot of overhauling at this point. And it's not an easy overhaul because they have a ton of expensive wages on their books, players like Pastore who are not contributing. So you have a core, you have a really interesting core there of young Italian players, Mancini, Pellegrini. If he comes back and is fit again, Zaniolo is one of the players I'm most excited about in Italy. But he has just had two consecutive torn cruciate ligaments. So let's not just consider that as an automatic. It's not. And then he has, what, three or four players who he's had before in his career and hasn't got on with. Mkhitaryan, Pedro, Smalling, all of these players he had some sort of trouble with at some point. He's got Edin Dzeko, who's been brilliant, but this wasn't his greatest season. He's 36 years old. Again, a player on a really big wage. And you don't really have an alternative as a proper number nine like that. I think it's a really, really tough recipe. And all of this talk of three-year contracts, great, sure, on paper. Rome is the most combustible place in Italian football, one of the most combustible places in all of Europe for the atmosphere it gets when things aren't going well. And Mourinho is one of the most combustible managers when things aren't going well. So but, I have reasons to think it might not go well, but I am but so Nikki, excited
when,
to
when
see it.
Say, when you say disaster, I mean, we also have to reel in our expectations for what Roma is, with Milan getting better, with Inter getting better. Napoli, we know, is going to be challenging top four. Atalanta is going to be there. Lazio, I mean, there are six or seven teams really fighting for top four. Obviously, yeah, Juventus is going to be top four, you'd think. If they actually get someone who knows how to manage, that'd be a great start this summer, who's actually managed before in his life. So with Roma, will it actually get worse from here? I mean, if you look at the drop-off, that is massive, by the way, from 7th to 8th place. The teams behind Roma right now, Sassuolo, Sampdoria, Verona, Udinese. So Roma is almost like the last frontier of this upper tier of teams, right? There's such a big difference between the front seven and then the rest of the league. So it's not going to get worse. They're not going to lose 6-2 to Manchester United or 6-1 to Manchester United. Probably again, right? They've had those calamitous collapses, but that's really not something I see with Jose Mourinho. I think they'll challenge for top four. I agree with Nikki, though, that it is a squad that's a bit strange for him. And I guess the best glass half full view of it is that it'll be another Max Allegri situation with Andrea Pirlo, who Allegri thought was surplus to requirements at Milan. He gets him back at Juventus and kind of awkward the first few days because he's the one who let him go for free. And he turned out to be still one of the best midfielders in the world at Juventus. And he plays very well under Allegri. So maybe he realizes, okay, Mkhitaryan, it didn't work in the Premier League like we hoped, but here in Italy, it's been a completely different thing. I hope for Roma that they get Nicolò Zaniolo healthy because I thought he was one of the three most important players to that squad. An attack of Dzeko, Zaniolo, Mkhitaryan is a very, very good one. There is a young core. There is technical midfielders available like Pellegrini, Veretout, Villar. You know, there's some decent players on this team. And I think the thing that I feel the most bad about is what happened to Paolo Fonseca. They started the season off on the wrong foot with that administration error, which was so stupid against Verona. I didn't think they should have docked points for it. Just, you know, let them off with one mistake. It didn't influence the game at all. But this season, when you look back at it 5 years from now, I think will be the one that is the most difficult to judge. No other season has been like this, where you have COVID, that there's that element of randomness from 1 week to another, half your squad might be wiped out with COVID positive cases. You have the most congested calendar, which is leading to more injuries. Roma has suffered more catastrophic ligament injuries than any other team over the last five seasons. I mean, if you look at the list of players who have blown out their ligaments, it is scary. It's almost like there's a curse there at the Stadio Olimpico. So I find it very difficult to judge a lot of teams. Even Napoli, look at Napoli, what happened with their last injury crisis. People were calling for Gattuso to get sacked. And now Napoli are still fighting for top four. They've been in a better run where they're undefeated now in over five games. So I feel bad for Paolo Fonseca. Do you feel like it was right for Roma to move on with Mourinho now available after he got sacked from Tottenham?
To be honest with you, from my understanding is that Fonseca himself no longer wanted to stay at Roma. I feel like he felt the criticism was a little bit too harsh. It's an environment that wasn't very pleasing to him. And I completely understand that, to be honest. Obviously, there has been rumours of the fact that the likes of Dzeko didn't get along with him, that dressing room, you know, bus stops, even though Pellegrini has come out to defend him. I think that they just felt it came to a time where there was just so much criticism, whether it's from fans, but this is what happens in Roma. Unfortunately, like you said, it's a very tough atmosphere. I mean, Fabio Capello's won everything, right? But everyone always remembers him for that Roma Scudetto because it's so difficult to achieve at that club. The thing is that what I find interesting about Roma is the fact that they are and were looking for an international coach, not an Italian. They wanted somebody who understood Serie A, but they want to have an international brand and one that appeals to people around the world. They want to be a global brand more than they want to just be an Italian brand. And I think that was interesting because it's been talked about, you know, they have Thiago Pinto, obviously Portuguese sporting director, you know, owners, American, Italians. If you look around their staff, there's people from all types of different countries. So they weren't obsessed with just getting, you know, like, well, I mean, Maurizio Sarri was supposed to be the clear front runner. But Mourinho is great for the brand. If he was willing to, obviously Tottenham will be paying half his wages for the first year. He's going to benefit from the tax bills in Italy. So it all made sense for him. But I agree a lot with a lot of what Nicky said. You know, I also agree with you, Matteo, because I do think there are so many exciting players there and so much technical players. But I also understand that Jose Mourinho comes with Mendes. And Mendes is a player who, you know, is an agent who will find you lots of players to just shove into your team, you know, sort of the right ones, you know, a little bit like what he did with Wolves as well. And I don't know whether that name, the fact that you'll be playing under Jose Mourinho, could mean they were able to navigate the transfer market a little bit better. I don't know in a time when there's COVID what they can buy and what they can sell. I'm not too disheartened, but it depends on what the ambitions are. If they're trying to challenge for the Scudetto, then I think they have to have a huge overhaul. If they're trying to get into the top four, then I think it's manageable by having Jose Mourinho in there. And I think for the brand of Roma, it is something, you know, as the capital city club, they wanted to make a splash. And having somebody like Mourinho is a little bit like having Ronaldo at Juventus. It is a Galactico signing. It is something that will get Americans on board, that will get the Chinese on board. People will watch this because it's Mourinho. So it's interesting to have it on there. So I understand the theory behind it, whether or not it works. It depends on whether they are true to their nature and everyone is willing to be patient and grow slowly. And I think that's the most important thing because I don't think the fans are ever patient.
There's a really interesting parallel that came into my head earlier today with this idea of Mourinho and what you're just saying, being like such a big name that he brings the club up. And there's a parallel that I can't imagine he would enjoy because of their rapport from way back when. But think about Rafa Benitez going to Napoli and suddenly it was the club that could get Higuain. That was the narrative around that move. Benitez means that you can do these sorts of transfers. My issue with it is still the financial one. Maybe the Friedkins are about to tip a whole heap more money into Roma. But if not, in this current pandemic period for football where no one has any money, when you're weighed down by wages, I sort of struggle to see how you're going to get the maximum benefit out of that appeal that we're talking about.
Because you mentioned Benitez, but I still think the players, forget Higuain a second because he's an expensive buy, but the Callejons, the Albiols, they made a huge difference going forward. And I think sometimes it is these different players that have lasted as long as they did last in Napoli and became these hugely important players. I don't know whether or not, you know, I don't think Mourinho can attract that. And there's always some weird things going wrong around when Mourinho's in charge. But I'm interested to see if they are going to be innovative in the transfer market because Thiago Pinto also wants to make a splash. So that's what's also interesting to see. Can they be creative? Because it is a difficult market. But if they do target youngsters and they have a little bit to sell, because I do think there's some good players there. So I don't necessarily think it can all be so bad. They just need to strengthen that defense, right?
I think Mourinho's relationship with the Italian media is something that maybe some of our younger listeners won't remember quite as much, given that it was more than a decade ago. But it was a very interesting one. And I feel like the Italian media knew how to prod Mourinho. If you look at some of the press post-match press conferences, the questions that they'd ask him, I feel like in the back of the mind, some of them knew that it was kind of the right question to just dig in to get the sort of reaction from Mourinho. And it was very much a tumultuous ride, right, Nikki? Like, what do you remember from that, the Italian media and the way that they covered Jose Mourinho? I remember fireworks every single weekend. It was volcanic. It was mercurial.
Yeah, I think Italian journalists enjoyed the game with Mourinho. I think even if you go back to his very first press conference with his famous line, "Non sono una pirla," which was a sort of saying, "I'm not an idiot," basically. The journalist who provoked that line from him, which became this sort of very famous Mourinho line, because it's sort of he was speaking in language that someone from Milan would use. The journalist who asked him that question was asking him about whether Frank Lampard would do well in Italy. And Mourinho had already answered a question about Lampard, saying, "Look, we're not going to talk about players from Chelsea." And Mourinho sort of came back and said, "Why are you asking me this when I've already said that?" And the journalist said, "Well, it's just a clever way of asking you a question you didn't want to answer." And I think that relationship was very embedded right from the beginning. Like, the journalist was sort of prodding him and joking with him all the way along. What's interesting to me is Roma were Inter's biggest rival in that second season when he won the treble. They actually were top. People forget this. They were top in April, late in April, with like four games to go. Roma were top of the table. And Mourinho's relationship with Roma was very antagonistic. He famously had another of his most famous sort of press conferences was him sort of saying "zero titoli" about Roma with them when Spalletti was in charge, who'd sort of been saying, "Hey, you know," about some penalty that Inter got in a draw, I think it was, with Roma. And Mourinho came back with this big rant about teams who, you know, we should be talking about all these great players they have and how they have no titles. But none of that rancor for Roma seems to have lasted. The reaction in Rome to this transfer has been hugely positive. And I think there's probably an interesting demarcation there, that even though Inter and Roma were going at it in that period, it isn't like Inter and Milan. It's not like Inter and Juventus, where you would have had an enduring hostility. I think those fans, even in Rome, have turned around and gone, "All right, well, now we can have him doing those lines, but on our side instead."
So we know who won the Scudetto. We know who's going to be Roma's manager next season, but we don't yet know who's going to finish in the top four. Only Inter has secured their place to go to the Champions League next season, but the other three spots are still up for grabs, and these are the following teams that are trying to get into the Champions League next season. We have Atalanta, Juventus, Milan, Napoli, Lazio, all looking to finish in spots 2, 3, and 4. But the two biggest teams that risk missing out are teams that no one was expecting, for very different reasons, to be in the positions that they were. No one was expecting Milan to lead the league for more than half the season, and no one was expecting Juventus at this stage of the campaign to still not know whether or not they will be in the Champions League. So, Mina, let's talk Juventus. Will they finish in the top four? And if they don't, what are the ramifications with the coach and with Cristiano Ronaldo?
Okay, so everyone knows that I'm a huge fan of Juventus, but there's a part of me that just feels like they don't deserve to finish in the top four. Not because I feel sorry for Andrea Pirlo, but I don't know what's happened to him, but I just feel like nothing makes sense to me anymore on that team. But I also feel like the behavior of Paratici and Nedved is really getting a little bit out of hand now. There's been so many disciplinary cautions. They've been told off. I just feel like, you know, Udinese took great issue with the way that Paratici was speaking to the referee. I mean, he does go on about it for a little bit too long, and he was wrong in his assessment. And yet there is something about Paratici continuing to scream at these guys. Their behavior on the sidelines is, in general, for me, is if you want a revolution, then you have to start with some element of class. And I think that when Allegri was there, everything just looked a little bit more sane. And, you know, I can't sit here and criticize Antonio Conte and then see these directors doing much, much worse. So for one, I would love that to happen. Their style of play, I mean, they were just really lucky against Udinese, to be honest. They turned it on for 10 minutes because Ronaldo was there, and thank God for Ronaldo. But this isn't a team that has any tactical identity. It seems to be dropping by the wayside. Bonucci said, if you think that this is the way that it's supposed to go, then you know nothing about us. I mean, we haven't learned anything from this. And there's a part of me that just thinks that they could well lose at least two games out of the remaining ones, and they could drop out. And when you look at the way that Atalanta's performing, Napoli do perform when they are brilliant, but sometimes they also lack malice. I don't know whether Juventus deserve to be there anymore.
I think it was an interesting weekend for Juventus because they were bad. We had a reminder that Cristiano Ronaldo is not bad. He's very, very good. And that kind of was the difference. And I think in the end, that might be why Juventus do end up finishing, not this specific game, but in the top four, is because even when they've been bad, Cristiano Ronaldo can quite often fix things. And not just him, there are other players there who fix things. And it's kind of same narrative we've talked about a lot this season. They're a team set up under Andrea Pirlo to sometimes thrive as individuals, but the collective game plan is not there. It's the reason that I've said for several weeks now, I think they need to make the change no matter how the season finishes. But I think they'll finish in the top four because they have enough talent, and they should. I mean, when you talk about just simply the talent in the squads, there's only one other team in Serie A that is on the same level as Juventus, and that's Inter. That's it. No one else is on the same level for talent. So it should be a foregone conclusion. The fact that it's not is indicative of how wrong things have gone.
They were awful in the first half against Udinese. And if you looked on social media, it felt like the sky was falling, and rightfully so, because in the halftime of that game, they were in fifth place and nothing was working. And to me, the most shocking thing, and the point where I finally realized, right, they need to desperately move on from whatever this is there was such a complacency about them, and there was such a lack of urgency. It's like, guys, you're fighting to finish in a Champions League spot. If you do not go there, everything will change. There's no way Cristiano Ronaldo sticks around to play Europa League against Bate Borisov in early August. That's just not going to happen. And to see the way that they were just kind of languidly moving around, and Udinese was taking it to them and created a chance, and Rodrigo De Paul, and then everything turns right in the second half, where De Paul's handball, and then Ronaldo, as he so often does, deciding and carrying this team when it matters most. But this was one of the most anti-Juventus performances that I can remember in some time. If there's been anything we've known, whether it's been Conte or Allegri or Sarri, it's that it doesn't matter how pretty it is, but they always found a way. And for the most part, they were organized. They knew how to hold on to a 1-0 lead. They were a team that was disciplined. And all that's gone out the window this season, where they make so many elementary mistakes. They shoot themselves in the foot. They're sloppy. These are all adjectives that we just have not associated with Juventus in the last 10 years. So I think they'll finish top four. I actually think that they will find a way to get 3 points against Milan, because even Milan, and we'll get into the Rossoneri right now, they have not been that convincing either. And Juventus are a better team overall. And Nicky, you're right. They do have the best team alongside Inter. And if on paper you have to rank them before the season, I still had Juventus as the best team on paper, because until they proved us otherwise, which they have now, they were the favorites for me. You can't take a team that's won 9 in a row away from being the top dog. So, you know, this is maybe the most interesting summer transfer windows, I think, what Juventus are going to do. So just quick fire predictions. Mina, Ronaldo, is he at Juventus next season? Or does it only depend on, even if they finish fourth or third, is he still going to be there next season?
If they finish in Champions League, yes, I think so.
Okay, and Pirlo, who's the next manager? Are we going to go Max Allegri?
Looks to be so. I think so.
I like it. He was never given time.
Also because he's fighting. Imagine Conte at Inter, Mourinho at Roma, Allegri back at Juventus.
So good.
And then Sarri somewhere else. You've just got all of the winners of Serie A since 2010 back in one room. I mean, not one literal room, but you know what I mean? Back in one room, going at it. That's so fun, guys.
Yeah. Nikki, shame on you for not mentioning Cersei Cosmi, because he will not be in Serie A next season, and we will be heartbroken for that. He has given us some very good content in the second half of the season.
I wonder if someone's going to find Simi. I wonder if someone's going to look at what happened to Simi in this sort of brief Cersei Cosmi-inspired period and say, all right, he deserves something more.
Such an awkward player. There's not no one quite like him. He's so long. He's like 6'5", but he's all limbs. And then his torso, it's unbelievable. He's like a telescopic player, the way that he latches onto a ball. But anyway, the other team that is fighting for top four that we did not expect to see in this position is Milan. They led the league for more than half the season, and they would be the first team in Serie A history that has led Serie A for more than half a season that would finish outside the top four. So, Nikki, what has gone wrong, or has nothing gone wrong? They overachieved like Lazio did last season, and then they've just fallen back down to earth.
Oh, something's gone wrong. They're better than they've been recently, at least I believe they are. I think that, yes, we can say Juventus and Inter have more talent, but there's still a lot in this team that I really like talent-wise. And I said it earlier in the season, I think I still... Maybe I believe it with a bit less conviction now because I really, really like the seasons that Barella and Brozovic have had. But I still think that central midfield partnership of Kessié and Benasse is, if it's not the best midfield partnership in Serie A, it's number two. I don't see one that's above it other than Inter's maybe. Inter obviously play with a three anyway, so it's a slightly apples and oranges comparison. There's still lots to like at Milan. There's still plenty about the team that's good. And I do think things that we discussed in the last few weeks, I think fatigue is a factor. I think the mental side of it is hugely significant. I think that Pioli has something to prove now to us about whether or not he can fix a situation like this. I'm not saying chase him out of town because that's not what I believe, but I think he has to prove something now. It's a lot of things. And as we again discussed last week, they have got the toughest run in. Every win counts. So getting one at the weekend was a good thing. The fact that Atalanta and Napoli both slipped up was a good thing for Milan. They're in this race with everyone else. But as you say, the Juventus game is very, very, very big for both of them at this point.
100%. So, Mina, if Milan don't finish outside the top four, Stefano Pioli, does he stick around? Now there's murmurs of Maurizio Sarri, maybe, who, by the way, was linked to Roma, and no one saw Jose Mourinho coming. All the big outlets were saying it's going to be Sarri. Is there going to be a change at Milan?
I don't think there should be. And if there is a change, then I don't think it should be Maurizio Sarri. I do think that they need a little bit more quality because what happened when they were overachieving is there was just a lot of energy being expended. With a little bit more quality, then they don't need to expend so much energy and then perhaps they can last for an entire season doing well. I think it's interesting because, you know, you were saying that you thought they were going to lose to Juventus, but they are a team that at least still try. I think Montipo was just fabulous for Benevento against Milan. But I do think that with Ibrahimovic, they have a little bit more quality going forward and at least shots or rebounds and for, you know, scraps that others can at least jump on. When it comes to Juventus, there was a huge talking point about the way that everyone was when they conceded the free kick and the goal that came with it. And it was just everyone looking really like lackadaisical, not even bothering, a little bit like Barcelona against Liverpool when it came to the corner. And so Juventus are taking everything for granted. They don't have the humility they once did, but Milan will try. And that is evidenced by Kessié. We speak so much about Barella, but Kessié, in a time when I can't be bothered to go to the fridge half the time, you know, and I just, you know, and I'm so exhausted and I just cannot be bothered in any way, shape or form to do
2021 mood.
Exactly.
Right.
I look at him sometimes on the pitch and I think the amount of effort he's always on the right side when he's defending, the way he contributes, the dummies, the understanding, it's almost like he has like, not just peripheral vision, but he can see everywhere. And I don't know how anyone has the level of effort and energy required. And Kessié, for me, I mean, he is MVP, like, wow, MVP. So I just probably wanted to give him just his props because I feel like we talk a lot about, and I know that he gets a lot of plaudits, but double emphasis on that.
Yeah, I fully agreed. I think the problem is, apart from Zlatan Ibrahimovic, there's no one else in that attack from Milan that you can really trust. Rafael Leao is infuriating. Ante Rebic has never really put it together for a full season. He'll score like a goal a game for a half season, and then he gets injured, and then he's out of form. But he's not a player that I think you can rely upon. Then there's a weakness at right winger. That's the biggest weakness for Milan right now. And to me, sacking Stefano Pioli after what he's done in the second half of the last campaign post-lockdown, and then the first half of this season, where if you put those two together, he would have won the Scudetto in any other season. Like, to me, it would be crazy to move on from him. The final team, though, that is a big team that is fighting for top four, Atalanta, you know, I wasn't going to talk about them because if they do or don't, like, they're amazing. Everyone loves them. Gasperini is going to stay there. But Napoli, a team that has had problems over the course of the season. Gennaro Gattuso's job has been put on the line. And a team that under Aurelio De Laurentiis really invested heavily last season. I mean, they spent 90, 95 million to bring in Victor Osimhen. They've got a big wage bill. They've got a lot of good players. But if they don't finish top four, probably some changes, maybe even some wholesale changes.
Well, it's going to be a new manager at Napoli. By the way, I would love it to be totally set in stone that Gasperini's staying at Atalanta because they're such a joy to watch. But there are reports out there at the moment that Tottenham might be knocking on the door, actually. So we'll see on that one. Obviously,
really?
They're not rushing to get him out.
I haven't seen those.
I'm not saying that's happening or it's not happening. I'm just saying that there are people out there saying that it's happening. So that's not from me, but there are reports.
Should have happened a long time ago. Can I just say our producer's like celebrating at this moment?
I think it was producer Tom that fed you the info saying that he got it reliably.
No, I mean, like, that's me reporting someone else's information. That's not my information. But I wanted to acknowledge it because some people will have seen those reports. Napoli situation, yeah, it's going to start all over again. Maybe they could be a home for Sarri now. I do feel like poor Maurizio Sarri is the dupe in this picture. Everyone's going crazy over Mourinho and poor Sarri, who, like, as Mina already said, like all of Rome, was quite certain he was getting that job, suddenly is left out in the cold and looking for where his next opportunity is. I don't know if it could be back at Naples, but it would allow us to have that picture I said before with all of the past winners back in one room, and that's what I want, so I hope it does.
It's interesting with Napoli because, like, always, when you look at who they have, you know, on the team, you think there's Mertens, there's Insigne's assist, Osimhen's control. Wow. I mean, when they play like the most beautiful football. Dembele shot from distance. You know, there's just so much talent within that side. And yet, it's, again, my issue with them is that, you know, when the going gets tough or someone really tries to push the accelerator against them, an opponent really goes for it, they're not a side that can hold their own. They're not ruthless in that way. The mentality that we've seen from Inter this season, the mentality we've seen from Juventus in the past, even Milan, they're not a side that can stand firm and say, no, you're not taking away our 3 points. And that's what worries me about Napoli and has worried me for some time and different managers. So I can't say this is Gattuso's fault or not. I think he's tried so hard to change it. But Semplici, I think, also deserves credit for that amazing comeback to actually just equal. I mean, this guy is just, we thought it's going to take a while for him to make a difference in Cagliari. It took a few weeks, but now you can really see the difference that he's making. But for Napoli, I mean, when it comes to talent, you always want them to be in top four. But like I said, they're a side that sometimes disappoint you when the going gets tough. And for that, again, sometimes I think, do they deserve to be in top four if that's always the way that they're going to do is collapse when it matters?
Well, it's been an eventful episode of Serie Awesome. Inter winning the Scudetto, Jose Mourinho as the new manager of Roma, the fight for top four. But we always have other small things that we pick up during the course of a week that we want to mention at the end. So what stood out to both of you, Mina and Nikki, from the last few days in Serie A?
I don't know that I have anything profound, but I just wanted to say, because it got lost in the mix, that the Atalanta-Sassuolo game, which of course sort of, I mean, there was the narrative around this game was, if Atalanta don't win, Inter win the league this weekend, which didn't matter, because if Inter didn't win the league this last weekend, they were going to win it next weekend. But actually, it was a really important game for Atalanta because they're trying to get in the top four, as we were just talking about. That game was just blistering good fun. I had such a good time watching it. I think Atalanta showed so much of their character because they were down to 10 men for an absolutely ridiculous piece of goalkeeping from Gallini, by the way, who's normally a pretty good goalkeeper. down to 10 men for most of the game. Eventually, Sassuolo were down to 10 men as well. But I think being down a player makes a difference in a cumulative way because it's about how hard you run. It's about how exhausted you are at the end of that time. I thought it was a really fun, tetchy, brilliant game. Robin Gosens remains sensational. Double figures for goals from the wing-back position. And then Luis Muriel has a penalty at the end to win it for Atalanta and doesn't score it. Great game of football. I enjoyed it. Watch those two teams. They're often very good fun to watch.
Mina?
Just quickly, I think Nandez, so underrated. So brilliant. But I wanted to, I don't know, because I was watching Lazio Genoa and I was like this. The defending was so horrifying in that match throughout. I mean, the amount of chances wasted, the amount of gaps in midfield, holes everywhere to be exploited. I mean, if Italy are going back to the way they were, please, can we just start teaching people how to defend again? Because this understanding of, you know, tight lines, of pressing, of pressure on the ball, of something was so not evident in Lazio Genoa. I thought it was a game that was really quite poor in quality because it was just a lot of open chances. Lazio fell asleep, obviously, conceded two goals in the space of 2 minutes. These types of things really annoy me to watch. So I really hope something's going to be addressed there and we can expect tougher standards next season.
And my final thought is that the relegation race, Cagliari have been in great form under Semplici, hashtag Semplici ball. That's going to be a thing. 4 games now, 3 wins, 1 draw, and they are currently 1 point above 18th place Benevento. But we also have to bid farewell to Parma, who will join Crotone and go down to Serie B. Parma, a historic side that had new American owner Kyle Kraus, spent a lot of money into the club. But unfortunately, a poor start under Fabio Liverani, got sacked, brought back their former manager, and it just has not really worked out for them. They've also been quite unlucky. I've done a lot of these Parma games where they were leading 2-0, and then they somehow let the game slip away and end up drawing 2-2. You look back to the Parma-Cagliari game where they lost 4-3. After being up 3-1 at halftime, they have been unable to keep a lead, and they right now have won 3 games, drawn 11, and lost 20 in Serie A. So that is a big blow to Serie A when a team like Parma go down to Serie B. Anyway, I hope everyone's enjoyed this episode of Serie Awesome. One of the craziest weeks that we've had. We've crowned Inter the champions. Jose Mourinho's coming into our lives once more after a long time. And next season should be absolute fireworks. For myself, Matteo, for Mina, for Nikki, this is Serie Awesome. Ciao for now.